Support for the Real College Podcast comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, and it's a production of Radio K.
How do I say?
It's a sad day indeed here at the Real College Podcast, as we say goodbye to the managing editor, host, and generally good guy of the past 2 years, Matthew Curtis, as he departs from the show following his graduation this past week. We'll take the next half hour to celebrate his time with the show and listen to a variety of stories that he's produced for us. And I also sat down with Matt one last time to reflect on his experiences with the show and also to get some pointers as I take the reins going forward. All of this and much more coming up right now.
It's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday.
Do you want to talk briefly about how you got your start just at Radio K?
Yeah, sure. So everyone tells you to get really, really involved the second you get to any college. And I was like, damn, what am I going to do? So I literally looked on the list of student groups, scrolled down there. I was this close to joining the League of Legends group. And my life probably would have been very different if I had. So I found Radio K, didn't really know what it was. Walked in there and had a lovely studio tour and heard the all the great things that people do afterwards and all the great things you can do while you're doing it. So I was like, I should give it a go. And never really left in 4 years, just stayed true to it. Got a job a couple months after joining, and then I got this job soon after, and then here I am.
Cool.
Kind of graduating with flying colors.
So once you got here, what kind of piqued your interest? Like, what made you want to stay? What about Radio K was unique?
I think the community is a very interesting one. I think it's because Radio K is such a huge resource for the community. Like, we've been recognized so many times by national publications like CMJ and ours like City Pages. We won best radio station, I don't know how many times, but it's been a lot. And it's just really nice to be embedded in that. Like, although Radio K is not as recognized as you'd like with the students, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
We have like this really nice foundation in Minneapolis, and it's, you know, it's great to get in the music scene. Like, we have brand new bands every week, and it's a really great community, both like in the studio itself and like in the surrounding areas.
For sure. So you were a DJ for a while, I assume. That's kind of how you got started.
Yeah, I did DJ training with Ross, who was the music director. He's also had a really good time here, like 4 years of tenure. And kind of went up with that. I have my own show called KUK. It was the British show. Whenever I tell people I do the British show, they kind of roll their eyes a little bit. But it's definitely the thing I know better than anything else. And I think I shed light on a lot of artists that might not be on people's radars in Minneapolis. So I feel like I'm doing kind of a service both like to them and to the bands and to me, because I love the tunes. That show dies with me, so no more of that. But it's been a good time.
It's been a good run. Okay, so then at what point did you take over what was then Culture Q?
I took over kind of when things were in a very transitionary period. But I came in there with a lot of new ideas. I tried doing the show live, which had never been done before. It was a huge failure. I don't know why I did it for so long. It's been a lot of fun, though, and I've seen many people hired and seen many people kind of graduate. And I think the squad that I'm leaving with has definitely been the strongest. I think with you and Jackie and David and Max have been an absolute pleasure to work with. I think it's been really good. I think we're definitely setting ourselves up for something good in the future under your administration.
And we'll see. So what was the show like when you took over?
I think it was very bread and butter. I think we definitely tried to be the weed and the wonderful. Since then, I think it's transitioned into like actual issues that are prevalent in both Minneapolis and in the US. So it's been very interesting to see that happen. I think that's definitely gone under personnel. People like David and Max have really kind of shed light on these issues that we've not necessarily been ignoring, but avoiding. I think we weren't really prepared to take it on. But I think under the college lens, I think we were really able to do it right in the way that we wanted to do it. It's been very interesting to see, and I think I'm very proud of the show that it kind of turned into. I think we still managed to take the weird and wonderful in different directions, but I think also we're serving a greater role by being kind of the student voice, or at least our student voice, in these changing times.
So how did the show change over your tenure? I know you kind of got into it, but like what kind of things did you do to kind of take it down whatever path you wanted to go down?
Well, I think I tried to really harbor environment that people could be very free to do whatever they wanted. I think that's a problem that people run into in the professional world. Like, they can't do a story because, you know, it's either it's not interesting enough, or like people don't see a need for it, or it's too much of a niche. But we really appreciate the niche. I think we really kind of admire when someone comes in here, a lot of energy, and have a lot of passion for something that I might not have a passion for. And although I'm not, that's exactly it. Like, I'm not the audience, you know, like everyone else is the audience. And if you're, you know, bettering your skills as a writer, as a producer, as a journalist, while exploring your interests and shedding light on things that people might not know about, I think that's just a great situation. So I think just doing that and less being, like, being less critical and more welcoming, I think, was kind of the main goal.
Well, one of the things we do for these retrospectives is we kind of play a couple of stories you've done in your time here with the show. So we're going to play the first one now. Do you want to talk about it a little bit and kind of introduce it?
So this one is about this this thing on Canvas called College Works Painting. And I saw it through lectures and posters and stuff, like, hey, do you want a job where you can make $30,000 in a summer? And I was like, oh, wow, this sounds too good to be true, because it probably is.
Right.
And a lot of people that I knew either did it or heard about it, and they were like, I don't know about this. So I did some digging. I think this was like the most investigatory thing that I tried to do at Radio K. I mean, I didn't get too far. You know, I didn't like crack open any, you know, big secrets.
Right, right.
But I definitely, you know, asked a question and I got a couple answers, if you know what I'm saying. I managed to speak to a good friend of mine who had done College Works Painting and kind of explored it. And definitely kind of saw their side of it too. I think it was very interesting to talk to people in the Carlson School and talking about, like, although it seems a little shaky, it's for this reason and this reason. But I won't go too much into it. But anyway, I think it's still going on. So if you want to get $30,000 in the summer, please feel free to contact College Works Painting. But as far as that goes, here's the story. Cool. I assume if you go to the U, you've been in a 100-person lecture hall for one of your classes. And the chances are, at some point, you've received a yellow index card. Here's how it usually goes. A guy enters the class and gives everyone in the room one of these cards, and it asks you for your information, things like your major, your email, what year you are. And while you're filling it in, the guy is talking about some kind of vague, highly competitive internship, which is for a company called College Works Painting.
Of course, they don't call it College Works. This is the interesting thing.
Rand Park is a senior lecturer at the Carlson School of Management in the Department of Strategic Management and Entrepreneurship. His former students often approach him about recruiting his class for College Works.
I let him do it. I always tell my students ahead of time it's not an official Carlson School or University of Minnesota thing, and to be very careful about giving your name and information out to someone that you don't know.
And in fact, he uses College Works and his former students as an example in his business ethics class.
Because that's a very interesting part of their recruiting technique is they say it's a top internship, fill out the card, you'll find out more information. They don't ever say it's about painting a house or starting a franchise where you have to hire the people. And any aggressive, and I don't mean that in a pejorative way, but in any aggressive sales model, you want to cushion objection on the front end. So if there's something about your product that might dissuade a customer from ever even considering it, you'd minimize that.
College Works was founded in 1987, or 1993, depending on what version of the website you're looking at, and they take on and teach college students to run their own house painting business within the company. Aaron Curti, a sophomore at the U, filled in one of those index cards I was talking about in the spring semester and took College Works' offer to be an intern for the summer.
I guess the best way to put it is you are a branch of College Works Painting.
So here's what you got to do. First, you have to get through the interviews.
The first interview was kind of like a group interview, and it was basically kind of a, from what I could tell, like a weeding out process.
And then training in the basics of marketing. Then you got to find some clients.
The majority of your spring is spent going door to door and trying to set up deals for the summer. It's very time consuming. You do it every weekend.
Then find a crew.
It started out with a basic Craigslist ad. I had one weekend where I had three of my four painters quit on me, which was awful to say the least.
And finally, paint some houses. I'm exhausted just thinking about it.
Does it take a certain person to be an entrepreneur?
I think it does. I think you have to have both a combination of the excitement of competition and not be scared of risk, the ability to handle the uncertainty of maybe knowing you're going to succeed or fail.
Failure. That's a word to be familiar with if you're looking to give College Works a go. A lot of people quit. Like, a lot.
It's always described as a very competitive internship.
Yeah.
Do you know why that is?
I think it's to try to appeal to it a little bit. You know, a lot of people apply, and they do accept a lot of people who are in it. If you make it past, especially past the first interview, they'll consider hiring you just because so many people quit. To say that it's competitive might be a little bit of an overstatement.
Aaron says your success as an intern is dependent on many moving parts. Here's how he puts it.
It all depends on how you manage your branch, I guess. So, you know, there are a few big components of your branch. So there's, you know, you're like your personal profit, how happy your customers are, how good of a job you do when you paint the house, and then how happy your painters are. One thing I guess I put last out of those four was my personal profit, because I wanted to pay my painters more. Maybe I'd cut the customer a special deal, you know, to make sure I could get the work in the first place.
So after a bit of calculation, Aaron figured out that he took home 13% of every dollar earned, with College Works Painting raking in 40 to 49% from every intern branch in the country, which is a percentage that raises some eyebrows.
It seems like a large percentage, but they, you know, in a sense are entitled to a larger share. Not every student is going to produce revenue, and yet they all require the same level of support. So that 40%, which is going to be quite a big percentage of some students' revenue, is also probably being spread over the number of other students who produce no revenue and maybe even losses. For a college student with no experience to be able to run a franchise, it should be expected that the people bearing the risk would take a significant percentage of the income.
Working too many hours for too little pay, glossing over the door-to-door marketing, the huge revenue cut, the fact that so many people fail to make any money at all, and that if you Google search College Works, it'll try to complete your search with the word scam. Is it a scam?
Cool. I don't think it's a scam. If I had any actual knowledge that there was true deception or, you know, abuse of student information going on, I wouldn't allow them to speak to my class. But if I can go out to the website and find out pretty much everything we've talked about in terms of the 40%, the line of credit, the way the marketing is going to work, the kind of expectations, that students are probably going to work harder than they've ever worked, that they're going to take time away from social activities because they're going to, I mean, that's all there. It's hard for me to feel like it crosses the line into unethical behavior.
And Aaron Curdy, a guy that went through it all, agrees with Park.
I don't think it's a scam. As a naive freshman in college, I felt that I maybe got taken advantage of a little bit for the amount of work I was willing to put in and kind of what I got paid. And I could have known more going into it. But if you do finish the summer, you do get the things they talk about as far as leadership, the communication, stuff like that.
So what's the best course of action here? Do you take an internship where you have the potential to lose out? And how can students avoid being taken advantage of?
Any buyer of any product needs to be careful, ask good questions. Through any situation where it's not easy, you're going to learn a lot. I think the healthy thing to do is to look at that and say, okay, what have I taken away from this? There's some culpability on the part of the aggressive sales techniques of the company itself that might have led a student to maybe not ask a lot of those questions. But I mean, at the end of the day, we have to take every experience that we have and think about not just what we've earned, but what we've learned.
This is Matt Curtis with Culture Q.
That was the first story that I actually heard of yours when I first joined, and I was impressed. I thought it was kind of a cool story because I'd seen that kind of stuff hanging around and definitely had some questions about it. So the fact that you were able to kind of dive into it and shed some light on it was really interesting.
Yeah, I feel like no one actually really tried in a big way to do it. And the fact that, like, on the website it says, like, is this a scam? Like, and they have to have an entirely, like, FAQ about it. It's like, well, if you have that on the website, you definitely, like, or setting yourself up for something. So it just, like, left me a lot of, like, wanting to know. And I didn't get as far as I maybe would have wanted, but it definitely was fun and definitely, like, kind of shed light on the college intern experience kind of looking for jobs, the desperation and the other side of it as well. It was a very interesting story to do, and yeah. I think it was one of my favorites.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit more about your tenure here at the show. I want to kind of talk about some of the highs and the lows.
Sure.
So what moments for the show, whether it was Culture Q or Real College Podcast, what brought you the most joy?
The most joy. Well, we haven't won any awards while I've been around, so that probably isn't a very good
sign. That's still coming.
I think we got an award 2012, and that was just when I was joining.
Okay.
So it wasn't. I didn't really contribute to it. So ever since I've been a part of it, it's gone downhill. So that's probably one of the lows. But I think Aaron Bolton is one of the highs. Like, at least my experience with him. He came in. He applied for a job he wasn't qualified for. I'd never met him before. And he was trying to get the music reporter job, and he had no Radio K experience. And a lot of people did that because it was advertised as, hey, do you like writing for music? And then a bunch of people applied, and they weren't qualified because they hadn't done any audio production, they hadn't done anything like that. And I said, hey, man, sorry we couldn't hire you, you just couldn't do it. And then, like him, so many people just left. I never saw them again because they were like, well, I'm not qualified, well, I'll see you later. That boy came back the next week, and he was ready to do it. You know what I mean? He put his time in. He really wanted to be a better journalist through the show. It wasn't about getting paid. It wasn't about getting a position at the job at the station. He really wanted to do good work, and the improvement that he saw was just phenomenal. And now he has a job in Alaska doing something crazy. I'm not sure what he's doing, but it sounds lovely.
Yeah.
And it was great to be a part of his progression as a producer and as a journalist. So I think through him, that was a big high for
absolutely
me.
What left you frustrated about the show?
I mean, journalism in general, I think, is super frustrating. That's definitely why I'm not going into it, because so much of the work is in someone else's hands. If you have a story idea, you're like, hey, I want to know about this, there's a million and one barriers that are in the way before you get to a finished story, between finding sources that are available, finding, you know, getting good tape, getting a good interview. Like, it's just so much. Like, and if you get it, and you will get it, it's just the best feeling in the world. If you don't get it, you're like, well, that didn't work out as well as I hoped. And, you know, I think people really thrive off that. I think people who are meant to be journalists really find ways to get around it and get these stories. I don't think I'm one of those people, man. Honestly, I'm like, oh, I guess that story isn't happening. So I think that's probably the most frustrating thing about the job.
Let's play another story.
Cool.
Do you want to talk about this one?
Yeah, so more and more prevalently, soccer is being a big thing in the US, and which is great because it's a universal sport. It really is. I mean, although it's not called football over here, like everywhere else in the world, but we'll let that be. So Minneapolis, Minnesota, a very... very fortunate to have Minnesota FC in our realm. They're a really great soccer team. There's a lot of rich community feeling surrounding it. They have a huge fan base, and they're going into the MLS in 2017, 2018. I'm not exactly sure about the details. And they have a new soccer stadium being built in the Twin Cities. And I kind of did the story when it was just about getting started, when they'd rebranded so many times before the show aired, because they were just kind of suffering with an identity crisis. And then the story takes place moments after they had solidified this franchise that would be, you know, able to get into the MLS, would be able to get this big stadium, would be able to get this community. And it's so nice to look back on it now and think, wow, like that was then, this is now. So it's great to see. I think it was a lovely piece to do, and everyone I spoke to was very excited about the whole thing. So, yeah, cool. That's Minnesota FC.
All right, let's listen to it now.
Professional soccer has had a colorful and confusing history in Minnesota.
The Thunder were around from 1990 to about 2009. They had been playing their games up in Blaine at the National Sports Center, and so the National Sports Center actually decided to start a team, and they started as NSC Minnesota Stars, then it was the Minnesota Stars FC. My recommendation was to rebrand the club with Minnesota United. And that's where we are today, and we feel very good about it.
It has recently been placed in the hands of this man, ex-attorney and now president of the team, Nick Rogers. The freshly dubbed Minnesota United Football Club, a proud member of the National America Soccer League, is both a team and a business to be reckoned with, and has only existed for 3 months. Last year, the team was acquired by Roger's father-in-law, Dr. Bill McGuire, known for his colossal contribution to United Health.
Well, obviously, there's not a lot directly from healthcare that applies to soccer, but I think, you know, his approach to business translates really well to what we're trying to do. We're in terms of trying to create a sustainable business that will keep pro soccer around for a long time.
Dr. McGuire and Rogers have steered this team around. Against the odds, Rogers called for the fourth name change in 5 years.
We saw some market research suggesting 3% of adults here knew that pro soccer was even offered. Very little equity in the brand as it stood. We also found that when you asked people about Minnesota Stars, the name had a very strong connection to sports, but it was to hockey.
Shying away from the typical style of American team names, United says soccer, as well as the message they're trying to convey.
We wanted to be able to say, look, this is a different era, and we want to unite that history and help people understand it, because it can be confusing.
And from the fans' perspective, they're going in the right direction. I spoke to Todd Smith, manager of Nomads World Pub on Cedar Avenue. Nomads is known for serving international beers and broadcasting international soccer.
We show pretty much anything that anyone would want to watch.
The pub has had its fair share of fandom experience for all teams, except Arsenal, and especially MN United.
The NASL franchise here has historically been good and has been challenged with undercapitalized ownership. And they had some new owners acquire the team that I think are well-financed and very bright guys and truly have a love for the game. I think the rebranding is good, I think the name is good, and I hope big things happen.
The team has a small but forceful fan base that have continued to support the team throughout the changes. And though the identity of the team has changed, the fans have always stayed true to theirs, the Dark Clouds, and they feel settled in the current state of things. This is the sound of the Clouds at their last home game at the Metrodome, a mid-season last-minute win against Fort Lauderdale, who they beat for the championship 2 years ago. The group of soccer fanatics dedicate their collective effort, filling the Metrodome with sound.
I really think the Dark Clouds didn't exist, McGuire wouldn't have bought the team, because they went and watched a match, and it was the Dark Clouds' presence, and I mean, you see how, like, vocal and rowdy, I mean, it makes it more fun. You know, like whenever I'm traveling, I always try to go to a football match because it's such a cultural experience. I mean, it's really fun.
And even if the future of the team is unclear, the Clouds and the rest of the fans will follow, picking up more as the season continues at Blaine. The perfect formula for creating widespread mainstream interest in soccer has yet to be discovered in America. But with a new name, a new logo, a hardcore fan base, generous funding, and the possibility of a new home, Minnesota United Football Club could be becoming a shining example of how to build a team from the ashes and inspire others to emulate.
Well, certainly we're trying to be out in the community and hold ourselves out as an inspiration, you know, especially to kids, and share with them our love for this game. We want to provide a touchstone for all things soccer in Minnesota. We want to be a shining example of what soccer can be in this community and have an example for kids where they can look and say, here's an example in my community of someone who loved this game, pursued it with all their heart, and now they're getting paid to do it. And that's the path I want to have. And if you don't have examples of that, it's hard to even dream that. Ideally, we can, in the longer term, be a part of really changing youth development in this country, because I think developing youth talent has been a problem in the United States for a long time. It's why a lot of the players on our roster today are international players, because the best players in the world haven't always come from this country. We'd like to be a big part of changing that.
Soccer fills pubs and bleachers and creates pride and excitement within the sport, the team, and the community. This is a franchise that hopes to stand the test of time and be a team that Minnesotans can relate to and enjoy. This is Matt Curtis with Culture Q.
I like that story.
You know what, man? Like, it was a lot of fun. I mean, I'm actually a pretty recent soccer fan myself. I wasn't raised on it. I didn't,
really?
Like, I don't have, like, a team. Well, I guess I do have a team now, but, like, I didn't, like, grow up with any family bases.
Sure.
You know what I mean? It was nice to see it through a new soccer fan's eyes, I suppose. Although I have the background, like, the regional background, at least, to be a football fan. it was great to see, like, hey, this is Minneapolis style of doing it, and it works for Minneapolis.
All right. Well, I guess I just have a couple more questions, more directed towards me.
Oh, great.
And what okay. I'll be doing.
Yeah, sure.
So, as you know, I'll be hosting the show for the next year. What did you learn from experience that you can kind of clue me in just on a grander scale and help me out a little bit?
Well, man, it's going to be hard. It's going to be pretty tricky. It's going to be a relentless battle between success and utter failure. It's going to be fun. I think if you look at it with a keen eye, I think you'll have a good time with it. I think, let me see, personnel is huge. I think right now you have a really good squad. I think you're going to have a good time with it. Administration, I think everyone likes our show as far as Radio K goes. So it's nice to have some strings pulled for us at times and have kind of like the backing of the administration. You'll feel like you're underrated. I think that's probably a good feeling sometimes. Doesn't make you too... you won't feel cocky while you're doing the show. You know, that you can say that at least. But it'll be nice to host a show and feel like it's yours. At least feel like, you know, part of it is yours. I think you'll be fine. Cool. I think you're a very qualified, nice man.
Appreciate that. Well, we're going to hear a couple, some words from some of your colleagues here.
Oh, lovely.
And I think that's it, Matt. Do you have anything you'd like to say before you go?
I don't know if anyone listened to the show at all, but thanks if you did. I don't know whether you just tuned in at the prime time of 6 p.m. on Sundays or you subscribed on iTunes, but I appreciate you listening to my voice and kind of going with the whole thing. And I'll see you around, I suppose.
Cool. Well, thanks, Matt. I honestly couldn't have done it without you. I wouldn't be here without you. So,
well, thanks, man.
Yeah, no, your leadership over the last year and a half since I've been here has been very important to what I'm doing. So thanks a lot.
Thanks, man. I don't know whether I put me and leadership in the same sentence again, but I appreciate it. Take care.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay, so I first met Matt about a year ago. I had just transferred to the U, and I come up to Radio K on the little tour thing that they do every year at the beginning of the year. And I had no idea whatsoever what I was doing. I was just a lost young Negro in a sea of white people. And I had no idea what I was doing. The only thing I knew was that I wanted to be on the radio and I wanted to be involved with the radio station in some sort of way. So I was touring around Radio K, not really knowing anything about Radio K whatsoever. And I met some of the DJs or whatever, and it was cool. But then when I walked into the Culture Q section, it seemed like exactly what I wanted to do. It was telling stories. And the way that Matt was talking about it, I mean, I was obviously interested. I'd never really met a British dude before, so that probably contributed to it a little bit as well. And the thing about Matt is that he always had faith in me, no matter what. Even though I accidentally let him down one time and I said the N-word on the radio and I wasn't supposed to, apparently, Matt always had faith in me and he was always super supportive and we had a bunch of good times. And it's unfortunate that he's not going to have a career in radio because he was damn good at it, and I wouldn't be in the position or have as much knowledge about radio as I do today without Matt. He helped me a ton on so many different levels. And overall, he's just a real cool dude, man. He taught me a bunch about like British stuff and British slang, like bants and lads and stuff like that. And, you know, whatever Matt does, I'm sure he's going to be successful at it just because he's all around dope dude, man. And I'm sad to see him go, but I'm sure he's going to be doing amazing things at whatever he does. So salute to you, my friend. I thank you. And I will always remember you as the first editor dude that I had and somebody that helped me a tremendous amount along the way.
So I was thinking about what to say, and honestly, I can't even express how thankful I am for all of Matt's hard work here on Real College Podcast and on Culture Q. Matt taught me so much about radio journalism, which I didn't even know anything about when I first started volunteering here. He kept encouraging me to follow through on my story ideas when I was starting out as an ambivalent, non-committed volunteer, and thanks to him, I ended up learning a lot and really loving radio journalism. Matt always downplays it, but he's been a truly fantastic editor with the patience and the skill to improve our stories. One time, he even drove me about 30 minutes and back to go interview an expert pumpkin grower, and he didn't even complain once, and this was on a Saturday. Matt, your presence at Radio K has always been so friendly and positive, and you've helped everyone feel welcome. We're all going to miss your thoughtfulness and talent in crafting all of these shows and stories. I know that with your creativity and enthusiasm, you're going to do well wherever you go, whether that's in advertising or, of course, in journalism. Good luck with everything you do. Any place is lucky to have you. And please don't forget to visit us sometimes.
Yeah, I alluded to this earlier, but I truly would not be here without Matt Curtis and his guidance and dedication to my growth over the past year and a half. It took me like 2 months to finish my very first story for what was then Culture Q, but Matt's patience and passion and persistence kept me invested in that story, but also the show in general. Matt has left some massive shoes to fill with his departure, and if I can be half of the editor and host that he was, I will consider this next year a massive success. Our weekly meetings will not be nearly as much fun without his presence. That is for certain, and he'll be greatly missed as he heads off to make the world a much happier place, just as he did for Radio K and our show. Matt, I will miss you very, very much. That's all for the Real College Podcast this week. Be sure to tune in every Sunday at 6 p.m., or better yet, subscribe to our podcast. Just search for the Real College Podcast in whatever podcatcher you use. Thanks so much for listening. I've been Patrick Sharkey, and you're all stuck with me now.